Another hour of Advanced Living Radio. This is Ken, so thrilled and delighted to be your host again today. And guess what? We are just going to have more fun and adventure because I'm on a quest. Daily I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun inspiring the largest number of people to easily, naturally, joyously experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so we can all get our needs met and celebrate a global loving community that works for everyone. Yes. Yes, that's what we're going for, one step at a time, one week at a time, and of course, one wonderful guest each week to bring you something of poignant value for your lives. And before we get started, to let you know, our show is brought to you by AdvancedLiving.com. Go to that website and learn about the Comfort Technology, a tiny plug-in unit that when you plug it in, it creates a harmonizing energy like having the Dalai Lama show up and meditate in your room. And it's just great for better sleep, great for more alertness, great for harmonized energy for whatever you're doing. Check out AdvancedLiving.com. And now, all are we in for a treat. You know that most of us are very actively wanting to make our lives better. And in these challenging times, oh, isn't it up in our face about everything that just isn't quite working? And have you noticed there are like loads and loads of people out there who are inviting you to go participate with them because they have discovered something, they've made their life a success, and they're for sure going to help you to make yours a success. And depending upon their fees, my gosh, for some amount of money, your life's going to work for sure. Well, I don't know about you folks, but I know I have taken like hundreds of trainings with some of the best people out there, and I've benefited from some and had others that it helped some, but it didn't do any good for me, so I've been on a quest. Well, our guest today, what a wonderful, wonderful, timely guest we have, the woman Connie Joy. She has been a quest on herself and especially focused on one man in particular for a period of years, James Arthur Ray, and his work. You may have seen him in The Secret. Well, our guest, Connie, she's good old college grad, a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science, Mathematics from the University of Santa Clara, and an AAS in Medical Laboratory Technology and Electron Microscopy. And she's worked as a medical laboratory technologist, a chemical engineer, a large computer system salesperson, and her husband, Richard, they are realtors and the brokers of their firm in the San Diego area, and they have a wonderful daughter, Erica. I mean, this is a good family, diverse in what they're doing, and they spent a bunch of time with James Arthur Ray, star of The Secret, if you saw that, and he built a large business on helping people with his personal growth philosophy. Well, she's going to tell us about her book, Tragedy in Sedona. If you hadn't heard about it, during one of his seminars, three people died and a number of them were injured. And Connie is going to help us to learn about this. And even more importantly than the James Arthur Ray kind of soap opera story, and there's a component of that that's very soap opera, but beyond that is her passion to help us be discerning about where we put our trust and faith, and so that we make wise choices. Well, on with the show. Connie, come on in.
Oh, thank you, Ken.
Okay. Well, my goodness. I just want to check in with you about, for instance, how did you hear about James Arthur Ray and start taking his seminars?
Well, you did mention we saw him originally in The Secret, and friends of ours invited us to go see him speak in San Diego, and at that time he charged for his intro talk, so we did go. It was through the Learning Annex, and he promoted his seminars as being both a blending of the spiritual and scientific principles, and from your description of us, that you could see that we're kind of nerds in our family, and so, you know, older nerds who now decided that it's time for us to really go out there and start exploring our spiritual aspects of our life, not just our business and our intellectual. And so that really appealed to us, because not many people talk about blending spiritual and scientific principles. So that's how we got started with him. And 27 events later, including a trip to Egypt and a trip to Peru, that was our time period with him.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So that's an extensive amount of interaction, and you became, as it mentions on your book, and folks, in case you're interested, the name of the book again, Tragedy in Sedona. That's TragedyInSedona.com is a great website to go find more information, and if you want to get the book, you can, because it's just packed full of important information that they went through and things that will help your life. Now, what is also interesting, too, is you make mention the subtitle of your book, My Life in James Arthur Ray's Inner Circle. And, of course, what does that mean to be part of his inner circle?
Well, we were founding members of the World Wealth Society, which James referred to as his inner circle. So through that, we went on private events and trips with him, like to Egypt and Peru.
Ah, okay. Very interested. Now, was this teaching with the World Wealth Society focused on making more money?
Well, not really. I know, see, wealth is something a lot of people confuse. Wealth just means well-being. And there's many aspects in your life besides financial. As we all know, there's people we see out there who are celebrities, who are have fame, they have money, but maybe their relational part of their life is pretty well destroyed. And so you have to ask yourself the question, are they wealthy? Do they feel abundance in their life? Are they happy? And the answer to that is probably no. So in my case particularly, I was not there for financial increase. We've done fairly well. We've worked really hard all our lives, but financially that wasn't what we were in for. For me, I was looking for ways of improving my health and my body, and that was what I was looking for. And then second to that was increasing my spiritual connection and my knowledge.
Ah, okay. And I'm guessing since you took 27 events with Mr. Ray that you were getting some benefit from this stuff.
See, yeah, absolutely. And also some of those events were ones where we volunteered, so we were the ones coaching people through walking on fire or breaking boards or bending rebar with their throats. So, again, so we've seen it both as a participant and as somebody that was actually coaching people through these events. Did we get something from it? Absolutely. If we didn't, we certainly wouldn't have kept going. If our first event with him and our first day was to walk into his sweat lodge, it would have been all over. We would have been done and out of there, and we would have gone on our merry way. But his material and what James does and what's part of this tragedy, it's not just that wonderful people were hurt and wonderful people lost their lives. It's that this man is extremely bright, very intelligent, and he had a gift. And his gift was taking a lot of different information from different groups, different types of philosophies, and being able to present them in a way, merge them together and present them in a way in which, you know, the average Western mind can absorb it. And that was a gift. He was truly a wonderful presenter. And in that case, we learned a lot, and it was wonderful. What we, unfortunately, he started to believe his press. And at the, after The Secret, they were, the media was referring to him as the rock star of the transformational movement, and unfortunately, he started to believe that. And the ego, the money just got completely out of alignment, and eventually he worked to a point where the compassion was gone, and that's what we saw in 2009.
On your website, folks, if you go to tragedyinsedona.com, I love the way you begin with this quote from the Dalai Lama.
Yes.
Because to me, that is like when we look at someone that's doing real well on their spiritual path, the Dalai Lama is probably in the top 10 on the planet.
You would have to say that out of the, what you'd refer to as a master, if we have somebody that we can pretty safely say is a master in this lifetime, I would say he's it. And his quote that I used was that each student must be encouraged to take responsible measures to confront teachers with unethical aspects of their conduct. If the teacher shows no sign of reform, students should not hesitate to publicize any unethical behavior of which there is irrefutable evidence. This should be done irrespective of other beneficial aspects of his or her work and of one's spiritual commitment to that teacher. That kind of nudged me into saying, you know what, I really have to tell people what's going on. I can't shut down. And I did feel like shutting down when a dear friend of ours died, another dear friend of ours almost didn't survive the night. And it took a while to close back down and try to digest it all and then decide that, nope, I needed to go ahead, because if this just prevents one person from falling into this trap later on their own, then it served its purpose.
Right. And can you give a brief thing? I know we're hearing about, you know, the Sweat Lodge and this. Not everyone understands what those are.
Okay.
Can you kind of like tell us and then go, okay, well, here's what a Sweat Lodge is. This is what he did. And then some people died, some were injured, a bunch.
A bunch. Yes, three people, as a result of that Sweat Lodge, did lose their lives, and many suffered some pretty serious injuries. First of all, I need to say this right off the bat. You're calling this a Sweat Lodge, and it still makes me cringe when I hear that now that I know more about what a Sweat Lodge is. And the Native Americans are very upset, and they have a right to be. This is a sacred ceremony of theirs, one which you would never pay for. They would never accept money for doing it. You can make a donation afterwards if you want. But James kind of hijacked a sacred ceremony of theirs and turned it into a money-making proposition. And in doing that, he took what should be, kind of, if you want to think about it, it's kind of like a sacred sauna, in that generally speaking, and this is general, every practitioner, every shaman is going to have their own little take, but in general, you bring in a couple of hot stones, they're put in the center, some water is ladled over those stones, maybe there's about 8 people, average 12 people inside this covered tent, that the flap is then dropped down, it's pitch black. And you spend a few moments, and you're talking, you're having a conversation going. The shaman is asking you at each one of these to release something from your life. And it usually doesn't go on more than 4 sessions. Now, if you consider what James did, James would bring in as many as starting off as with 12 rocks, dump a 5-gallon bucket of water over the top in a tent of which he's packed. In the case of the year I did it in 2007, we had about 68 people packed in there. And when I say packed in there, I mean you're sitting shoulder to shoulder, you're leaning against each other, and your knees are pulled up under your chin, and there's another ring of people in front of you leaning against your legs. So you're packed in there as tight as you humanly can. They drop the flap, it's pitch black, and the amount of steam, all I can say to, again, you are expected to sweat. It's called a sweat lodge. But he, again, James bragged that his was the meanest, hottest, toughest sweat lodge there was. Everything to him had to be turned into an X game. And this was, I would say, as a person who's in a sauna almost every single day, I was again today, I usually can sit in a sauna at 170 degrees, that's max, and I can be in there no more than 20 minutes. I set the timer for that as a max because it's generally accepted that's a that's a safe range to be in, a max. In this case, I have to tell you, in that sweat lodge, it was hotter than anything I can possibly describe to you. It felt like your skin was being burnt off and your throat and your lungs were going to be completely exploding on fire. And did that for anywhere from 2.5 to 3 hours. Mm. So it was way too hot for way too long, and that is the result. That's the reason why those people died.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is just quite interesting, because as you're saying these things, the thought that was flashing in my mind was of like someone going into what would possibly be called the Navy SEAL training or
yes.
or Green Beret training, where you have people who are in great shape before they go into this stuff. They've already been through a boot camp and gone through some military training, and then from that place, then they're taken to push to intense extremes, for important training purposes. And I'm hearing this theme of intensity, and wow, this is the toughest sauna in the world kind of thing. And
yes.
And I'm thinking, well, okay, but where's the basic boot camp to help
where's
people?
Where's the spirituality? Again, let's remind ourselves what the purpose was. This is supposed to be a spiritual awakening. And Ken, I do want to throw something out there. Even with something like the Navy SEALs or the Crucible that the Marines go through, I mean, there's medical help there. When they're pushing people to a point, I mean, there's a lot of medical help that's there for these people. James would get angry. Back in 2005, he had a man who was taken away by ambulance with heat stroke at the end of the event after he had just walked off and left them all behind. They had to go find him to bring him back, and he was furious that they had called 911. So here was a man in life-threatening heat stroke, and he was mad that they had called called for an ambulance.
Oh, so there wasn't medical support on the
no.
site?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
So when we say you're pushing people to extremes, you have to say what's reasonable. Now, the lot they tried to make out of the fact that the one woman that was there happened to be a nurse, one of the participants happened to be a doctor. That just happened to be. They did not have her there because she was a nurse. She just happened to be one of their coaches, and she had been in her past a nurse. So they're trying to say, oh, we had one there, and she was. I know her personally, and she was not there as in the function of a nurse. So, no, they don't have medical attention there, and in my opinion, they are trying to push people to those extremes in an attempt to almost bring on, if not bring on, a near-death experience. And I have to tell you that nobody walked into that sweat lodge my year or any other year with that idea in mind as their goal. James was working on his own itinerary and not sharing it, obviously, with everybody else. And also, too, by the fact he called it a sweat lodge, a lot of people either had already been in a sweat lodge once or knew people who had been and had a wonderful spiritual experience. So that lulled them into, again, a feeling that, okay, well, this is going to be a wonderful experience. And so they were really caught off guard.
Yeah, and so I guess the... bear with me. It was like you went to one in 2007, right?
That's correct.
And that came off okay?
No. No. Now, just to kind of summarize what's kind of happened. In 2005, a man was taken by ambulance for heat stroke. In 2007, I saw so many people throwing up and disoriented, and one woman had to be carried out because she could not control her movements. She remained that way for several hours. I was completely appalled by what I saw. I used to work in a hospital emergency room as a medical laboratory technician. What I was seeing was just any one of those people you would have seen, you would have been on your phone dialing 911, and yet at one time I'm looking at about 20 people who were completely out of it. In 2008, this is the year before, one woman was carried out, and she was unresponsive for they're agreeing to at least a couple hours, if not more. Another one was in such physical duress that she thought that she was going to die. That's somebody I know. She actually called them to go get James to help her cross over because she thought she was dying. And a friend of ours saw his life flash before his eyes, and he stopped breathing twice. That was 2008. Now, these are the highlights. There's people all around laying on the ground in fetal position, shaking and in shock and having all kinds of problems. So That's what we need to dispel. He had tons of warning. In 2007, I wrote an email after my experience, and I rated the different events and activities in spiritual warrior out of a scale of 10. And I went back and looked at that, and I looked at the actual sweat lodge. I rated it a 0 out of 10, and I said, because it was dangerous. To know me, I normally will give you a point or two just for, hey, tent didn't fall down. You know what I'm talking about. I'll give you credit for something, but for me to come out and say 0 out of 10, meaning I'm saying this is worthless because it is dangerous. And I said that at the end of 07, and that email went viral all over. So, we knew it. A lot of people knew it. We had hoped with other problems that he had had right before there where, again, he was pushing people too hard, too fast, and there were injuries. We thought he would back down some and that he was going to make this a more reasonable experience. But as we found out when it happened, obviously he did not.
Yeah. And so... three people died. I don't know how many. Was it 20, 30 ill from it?
Well, I think there was close 18 to 20 people that went to the hospital. Four people were life-flighted out. My friend was the first one that did survive, but he was not expected to survive the night. Eventually, the second person life-flighted out was Liz Newman, who was our friend, who did die after being in a coma for a week. And then there was two other people, and they suffer different levels of organ failure. So the question has to be, and it has to be to your viewers too, why should you read this book, and what does it mean to you? What does this help you with? And what it does is it gives you the pointers to start to see how even an expert manipulator, and when I said he was a very good at delivering the material, he described himself as a master NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. He also did stage hypnosis, which got so completely out of control in 09, which was when we were already pulling back away from him and saying there was problems. What you have to understand is that this spiritual warrior event was the pinnacle of it, like kind of like your graduation. And so each event as you went up got a little more difficult. So events say like first breaking a board, which was the entry level, and then later on snapping an arrow against your throat or bending rebar with your throat or walking fire. Each one of those times you may have felt, I did, that, I can't do this, and he's telling you, yes, you can. It's mind over matter. Yes, you can. And so what happens is you do it, you're successful, and you kind of, every time you proved yourself wrong, your gut intuition wrong, and him right. And so after a while, you build up a trust, and that can happen with any teacher. And by the time these people in the sweat lodge realized that even though he had promised them verbally before he went in there that they may think they're going to die, but they're not, and even if they passed out, he would take care of them. By the time they realized, heck, this is crazy, I'm out of here, when they tried to get out at that point, when you get dizzy or disoriented, they couldn't get out anymore, and that's how they got trapped in there and died.
Oh, whew, is what I got to go, just like, oh, big, deep breath and heavy sigh. Whew, now, I'm so glad that, Connie, that one, you had the wisdom to break free, because there you were in the inner circle, you did a bunch of things that are beyond what most of us think we can do, walking on fire, bending a rebar or an arrow with our throat, stuff that is both dangerous and is a breakthrough. You did those things, and if I'm understanding, James was in there basically, and this is what I'd like to get some confirmation. I don't know for sure. You probably do. There's a difference between a trainer who teaches someone to do something and then has them feel good about themselves for doing it versus a trainer that teaches someone and then claims the glory for themselves. And bonds people to them to keep him coming back and build his business.
Well, it was never a point where you were done. He started to, as his popularity rised, all of a sudden events that were standalone events became, a series that you should be taking them more than once or pushing on and on for more and more. And there's a big difference. Originally in the beginning, he did give you the credit. You had to understand that you had just done this. but it was very easy for him to insert himself that you needed to still learn more. At what, you know, I've heard a lot of great teachers say that, you know, my job is to get you to a point where you're ready to move on. And he had started out that way back in very early 07. But by the time 2009 came around, he was going to keep you there as long as your credit card could go through. And that was the determining effect, because a lot of people said, well, what about, was this a cult? And the answer to that is no. There was no religious overtones in this, and I would have to kind of, in a very loose way, the metaphor would be like a Costco. You get a membership to it, and you get inside. Well, they don't make any bones about the fact that once you get inside as a member, they expect you to buy stuff. And if the time comes where you can no longer afford your membership, well, no hard feelings, but you just can't come in anymore. And in a year or two, if you can get it together and you can buy a membership, you're more than welcome back. So it's not like, oh, gosh, you have to belong forever, and if you're outside the group, then, you know, you're ostracized. That's not the case. But this was a money-making object for him. This was what he was intending to do.
Yeah, and... is a curiosity about what went on, that here are these signs that are very distinct of people getting ill on a regular basis, and this being ignored, and then so I'm guessing someone who was making suggestions. Back off a little. Make sure there's medical support available. This is an aware, conscious person that totally ignored these things.
Well, now that your opinion was not welcome, and that's what I quickly found out. I was told I was the only one that was concerned. Which later, after the event, I found out that my roommate, who is a psychologist, she complained to them that this was dangerous, and they told her she was the only one that was concerned about it, and I talked directly to his chief of operations, saying that this is not, you know, you're not concerned about this being too hot, and no, this is absolutely wonderful. So, and they were aware of it, because when I said that, you know, these people shaking on the ground, this is shock, this is not okay either, and they were like, no, James knows what's happening, look, he's looking right at them, see, yeah, no, he knows, he's fine, he's done this before, this is the way it's supposed to be. And I'm thinking to myself, no, this is not the way it's supposed to be, this has gone past any point of, you know, that you can make an excuse for this.
Yeah, wow, and so... like in your book, you go into a bunch of detail about your experiences, and then I'm wondering if you're thinking of some advice to give people when they're pursuing a path of spiritual or personal growth.
Right.
Number
one, be your own guru. Truthfully, you can learn a lot from books. And I'm not saying nothing replaces having a teacher that you can find that really resonates with you, but the whole time you do this, just because they say they're a spiritual master or a religious person, you still have to keep your eyes open. You're a consumer. The spiritual movement is now a $2 to $3 billion industry. When you reach something like that, you know you're going to have things come out from under rocks that you don't want to be dealing with, and you have to keep yourself engaged as a consumer. And that's why in the last page of the book I say that here's some things that has to happen. I'm still very much in support of the movement. I'm still going to grow spiritually. And if the right teacher comes along, I don't have a problem with listening to them and allowing them to instruct me. However, I'm going to stay engaged and conscious of what I am doing, and if the red flags start coming up, I'm going to pull back and think about it. But there, for somebody out there who says, okay, what about this teacher? Well, first of all, your teacher has to be willing to truly and freely give you their credentials. They're applying for a job with you, and this is a very critical job. This is your spiritual growth or your personal safety in some cases. And just like any resume, on there has to be somebody you can call. If this man wants to claim that he has been trained by Native Americans in sweat lodges, well, then he better be able to give you the name of who trained him, when, and how long. And you ought to be able to be free to call this person up and say, hey, I understand sweat lodges are like 10 to 12 people. He packs 60, 70 in there. Are you okay with that? You know, kind of a situation. Again, provider credentials clear and easy
to get a hold of. The other thing's full disclosure, no secrets about what's going to happen at this event. James didn't want people to know the specifics. It was very vague what was going to happen next, and we weren't supposed to share what our experience had been. Well, and also at the last minute, he would give you these waivers to sign that was too late. You were already past the point where you could get a refund for these very pricey packages, this $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 packages or events, and that kind of disclosures need to happen while you still have the opportunity to back out. I mean, if you don't want to walk fire, you need to know that this event involves walking fire, and you should have the opportunity while you can still get your money back to back out. Another last one, I'll just say quickly, trust accounts. I mean, this man was collecting hundreds of thousands of dollars from people for events that might not happen for 2 or 3 years out. It's looking apparent suddenly this guy who was supposed to be a multimillionaire with a multimillion dollar company, that wasn't true when he couldn't even make his bail. So apparently that money was either disappeared or being lived off of. And in my opinion, I think these kind of funds should be kept in a trust account. And if the event doesn't happen, it gets returned to the people.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So, I had no idea of some of the fees involved in this and that things were being paid for months or, I guess, apparently even years in advance.
Oh, years in advance, yes.
Wow. And I'm guessing I haven't I only did one brief training with him an evening in Denver, and it was like, okay, this one was a free event. You came for a couple of hours. You got some a little bit of content. And then you got pitched heavily on, if you want more, then here's some special deals. If you sign up tonight, you can save huge amounts of money on things, but it still cost you a bunch anyway.
Yeah, they were still pricey. I think the cheapest was, you know, maybe with one of some of his special deals, maybe around $800, but generally they're around $1,200, $4,000. The spiritual warrior was just a hair under $10,000. And that's just for the event. That doesn't cover your room and board. You find out after you signed up that, oh, by the way, you still have to pay for your hotel and food, and because that's not covered in this $10,000. That all goes to James. And on top of that, it's transportation. So it's not unreasonable to believe that a lot of those people had paid close to $15,000 to be there. You're not going to fork out that kind of money and then find out the last minute by the disclaimer that, well, there's something in here I don't like. Well, if there is, that's just too bad for you, because if you don't come, you're not getting your money back.
Mm.
And that's not right.
Yeah, exactly. And to me, spiritually, one of the things that came up in some of my training was the idea, as a human being, we can make mistakes. There's a process about repentance. And that repentance, depending upon which philosophy you look at, deals with, one, recognizing that you did something wrong,
mm-hmm.
two, really feeling bad about it, and then further, letting the people know that you harmed, that you're really sorry, and then some form of restitution in which you do whatever is needed to make people whole again.
You're not seeing that here, Ken, are you?
No, that's why I'm bringing this up.
Not even a little bit, not even faking it. There's been no remorse, there's been no repentance, there hasn't even been a decent apology.
Wow. What I'm curious, I guess that if I'm understanding, I don't know if it's been changed, but I think the trial is coming up shortly, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, in fact, the jury selection starts the 16th of February. Opening arguments start right now, March 1st. Now, the defense has once again put in a motion to try to move the actual trial location. They've done this before, and they're trying again because they feel their excuse they're giving is that they would not be able to get a fair and impartial jury in where they're located because people were, quote, against him. And well, to give you an example, there's one person that wrote back in. They sent out a jury poll. It's kind of like a little opinion survey they sent to prospective jurors. One, to find out, I mean, this is supposed to be a four-month trial, so could you even really stay for 4 months? But the other thing they ask him is, are you aware of the case and the material, and do you have a preformed opinion, and could you keep an open mind? And this is a quote from one of those jurors. I believe his greed and inflated ego caused him to ignore the well-being of those who trusted him, and that led to the tragic deaths of three people. I would find it virtually impossible to be impartial as a juror in this case.
Yeah,
so they get it. They get it. And so they're trying to see if they can move it somewhere where people don't get it.
Okay.
And so we're waiting for that to hear what's going to happen. They're going to have to decide pretty quick because people have already been sent their information who are testifying and making their arrangements to get there. So that has to happen pretty soon. The other thing that just happened is the defense asked for and won the ability to exclude any testimony about what happened at prior spiritual warrior events. So what that means is that that man in 2005 who went in an ambulance, what happened the year I went in 07, what happened in 08, will not be brought up at trial unless for some reason the defense brings it up or leaves the door open, which they would be crazy to do that.
Wow. So, that is so, forgive me, I'm over here kind of like just going, but isn't that important and relevant to establishing his awareness of there being a problem?
Of and reckless behavior, yeah.
Yeah, and how do you exclude that information? And I mean, it's like just an interesting thing. I'm kind of sitting here wanting to do one of my famous.
Well, they're bending over backwards to give him every benefit of the doubt. Again, probably trying to make sure they can minimize the appeal process. But I would have thought that that information should have been presented to the jurors, and it will not. On the flip side is that James records his events, and there was a recording made of the actual words he said, those statements like, you may think you're going to die, but you're not. Those were recorded, and they've always claimed that people took those comments out of context. Well, when they found there was a recording, the prosecution asked for it. For some strange reason, the vendor who made that recording said he wrote over that recording with some other material, but that there was one delivered directly to James Ray International. They fought turning that over, and they just did have to turn it over. So that piece of information, at least they won on that, that entire recording is now admissible.
Oh, okay.
So there's people also, by the way, if they want to follow some of this, my website, tragedyinsedona.com, there's a couple of spots in there. One, we have actual reference material. So there's parts in the book where I'm telling you what happened that day and what happened through the sweat lodge. There'll be links, live links in there that will take you from the comment right from my book to the actual witness testimony that was collected by the detectives to where that information came from. The other thing is if you go to blog will take you to the Facebook page, and there's a lively discussion running right now as these motions are coming back in the court almost daily, and people are discussing the pros and cons and what's the implications of them. So again, from the website, tragedyinsedona.com, people can get to this information.
Right. And what I don't know, because I'm not like the great legal mind, I would be wondering if there wasn't going to be some class action lawsuit, not so much, I mean, this is about manslaughter, this is a criminal offense, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay,
they're very, very heavily, it's anywhere between 4 and something around 20 years per charge that he could be facing, if
right.
not guilty.
And I'm not sure about the process, but separate from that, I would think that there's a good-sized group of people that are thinking, geez, I think I'm ready for a refund, and want to make sure that no one else ever considers going to one of your seminars again.
Well, there is always the possibility of of civil suits after this is over, as far as dealing with especially the victims, you know, how do they handle their medical bills and other costs. That's probably going to happen too, and that's follow up to this one. But the problem with that system is, again, the man kept telling us how he would only ride in the front of the plane or the back of the car, otherwise known as first class, in a plane or in a limo, and that he was this multimillionaire and that he could show us how to, you know, be fabulously successful ourselves. But when it came time to posting his bail, the first time he didn't have it, and they had to reduce it to such a trivial amount just so that he could make bail to, by the way, go home and return to his Beverly Hills home where he's been living since. So if you come after him financially, the question will be, it'll be similar to an OJ kind of thing, you know, where is the money hidden and can you find it?
Right. Well, to me, one of the things in this, Connie, and this is just me, I want to put this out for you and the listeners just for consideration, is the idea that James is, and his behavior is offering an opportunity, because he is one of, like you said, now a $2-3 billion, and it's going to grow.
Yeah.
Because of hard times and people turning to whoever stands there and says, I can help you. And of course, to me, it's so reminiscent of old church kind of things that say, you know, we're your liaison between this world and God, and the more you tithe to us, the closer we'll get you to God. Anyway, here's this, you know, it's like here's an expensive seminar, and the more of these you do, the better you'll be spiritually and financially.
You're 100% correct, Ken. In fact, he would say that the money that you would invest in this seminar is trivial, because when you invest in yourself, that's the best investment you can make, and you'll be able to make up that difference in the course fee with no problem. You know, pretty flippant kind of guarantee if you want to take it that way, but that was how he sold it.
Yeah, and so to me, I'm just thinking about how is this potentially to, as reaching out to Art Linkletter, not someone that I'm sure James ever mentioned, but Art Linkletter, one of his children, took LSD and jumped out of a 9th or 10th story apartment window and killed themselves. And he was torn up about it, and then someone helped him to go, okay, well, now you have an opportunity to be a voice out there for helping people to live better lives. And I'm just thinking, how do we make, as a tribute to the people who are ill that may never recover and those that are no longer with us anymore, that there be a change, like you're suggesting, trust, putting money in trust and different things, and being told up front what's all, you know, to be expected, having medical support staff if there's anything going on, because even if it wasn't rigorous, you don't know when something's going to get triggered in someone, and they're going to all of a sudden go into a crisis and need help, and he didn't ever have any of that.
That's
so
very true.
So, I mean, here's an opportunity for us to maybe just begin to set some standards in the industry.
Yeah, and I'll let your people do the math, but before, you know, when you're thinking about these events that he's running, I mean, I've been at ones where, you know, we had 200 people and they paid about $4,000 a head to be in there. You know, that's a pretty good hunk of money. These people from Spiritual Warrior, if they paid just a little under $10,000 a piece, my year there was about 60 plus people there. This year, you know, around 50. A lot of their stuff was comped for their rooms and stuff for the people that were JRI. So this was a very sizable amount of money that he was making off these events, and to not be able to spring to have somebody there, you know, I mean, we do races for charities here where I live in San Diego, and when we do, quote, the foot races, even though they're fun runs and they're fun bike runs, we have paramedics there. You know, with the cart, because you just don't know when. And unfortunately, we've had a year where somebody who we had no prior knowledge of them having a health issue on a bicycle, literally had a heart attack and died. It's tragic, but you do what you can to protect against that. And this is a charity, you know, that we're doing it.
Yeah.
We're not making, you know, gobs of money. This man made a lot of money, and you know, if you want to say cheap, Do you want to say greedy? Do you want to say not making wise investments from a hazard point of view for his business? You can call it whatever you want, but there should have been people there.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, this to me, with what you're doing with your blog and other information, and you mentioned something about apparently you're well connected in the social media, because you said something that you got to go viral.
That was just when the original, this was back in 07, before all that social media really got flying. It was emails. You know how you send out an email to a group of people, and next thing you know, somebody's calling you that, you know, you don't even know because they got CC'd on the email going around. And that's what I did. I didn't pick any bones. I said exactly what I thought of the event. And by the way, just for people who don't know, right before this event, you were out on a vision quest in the desert without food and water for 36 hours. They bring you in that morning. They tell you then to drink up. You don't really know why, and at lunch they spring on you, well, by the way, skip lunch too, because you don't want anything in your stomach, you'll throw up because we're about to go into sweat lodge. Yay, here we go. So people had a whole week of very limited sleep. You were encouraged not to sleep, but to stay up all night journaling and doing work. There was nobody patrolling you to make sure you do that, but that was your expectation, and people who did do it were stood up and held and praised for doing it. You had limited sleep. Food was very controlled by him. It was a very tight vegan diet, very, very controlled. Your entire environment was controlled by him. So in my case, I had very little sleep. I had very little food for the whole week. The thing I minded most was the cutoff from water, both during the vision quest, and then you get packed into the sweat lodge. And the expectation was that you would stay there straight through for the 2.5-3 hours. That was your expectation. So, I mean, he didn't physically pull you down if you tried to get out, but you were told you couldn't leave unless the flap came up. And I understand that there were people who asked in between to go out, and he told them no, they had to wait. And you had to walk right by him to get out. So it was really clear that, you know, you were letting him down if you decided to go earlier.
Wow. That's so interesting. I see glimpses of some good things, but this to me, when I think of like the Native American Indians, if you look at that movie Kevin Costner,
Dancing with Wolves,
okay. I mean, and you see indications of people that were incredibly hardy. I mean, when some of these folks were doing a vision quest, I mean, their lifestyle, they were in incredibly good shape, and it was still demanding for them to go do a vision quest.
So absolutely, but you need to also keep in mind that the people, I have said that had myself and my husband died in 07 in that sweat lodge, the title would have read Overweight Woman and Old Man Die in Sweat Lodge. It would not have gotten, I think, half the attention to the fact that these people who died were younger, they call middle-aged, us older people wince at that. They're still pretty darn young. And they were all in excellent health. One was a surfer. That was one of her hobbies. The other gentleman was very physically active. So these are people in really good shape, physically in the prime of their lives, who got taken down in this thing. So, again, it wasn't just your usual American tourist sitting in there. Everybody was at risk.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. It was just pushing
too far.
Yeah. And what's so interesting to me, in comparison, I didn't do much with James. I did some things with Tony Robbins.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, what was so fascinating, in 1984, Tony came to town, did a fire walk, and I did that with him. And then the next day, he stood up on stage and basically bragged to the audience of how, him being a single man, he could pick out the women in the audience who were going to want to sleep with him. And I mean, this was just like, what?
This is not a spiritual master, is it?
No. And
the Dalai Lama wouldn't do it. That's what I say when people talk about spiritual masters. Say, can you see the Dalai Lama doing that? And the answer is no. Well, then that's not a spiritual master.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just interesting. I don't know. I know Tony's changed some of his ways. I haven't kept track of everything over the years. But but it's just so interesting at seeing the gap between the important spiritual values and people that are able to get in a position of power and assert themselves over others. And this seems to be abundant in your experience with James's actions.
Well, in the book, you've read it, so you know that I talked, too, about the fact that James seemed to have an interest in picking up women that were at his events. So, yeah, that's another thing that we started to see that was, again, another red flag that just kept adding till 2009. In short, we were just in August. This tragedy happened in the very beginning of October. In August, we were in Peru with him, and we had a very public, loud, about a two-hour battle with him in the lobby of one of the hotels, because, again, he was pushing people too hard and too fast to climb a dangerous mountain. And people came to us and said, you got to do something about this. So we worked out an alternative plan for people who were concerned. James found out about it and went ballistic, that we were coddling them and, you know, yada, yada. And it didn't get resolved there. We had a phone call with him just 2 weeks before this event happened in Sedona. And in that phone call, we told him we hoped we could resolve some of this. We were not. He was not going to listen to us. And in that phone call, we told him that we would not be volunteering at any more of his events. And we also told him that we would not be joining him in Sedona in just a couple weeks. We came that close to being there.
Mm. Wow. Wow. And that's just really interesting. So I'm guessing you won't be called on as a character witness in the trial.
Well, you know, James, I don't think he will be. I'd be surprised if James ever takes the stand. And here's why, Ken. One word's going to trip him up very badly, and that word is why. Why did you feel you needed to do it that hot and that long? Why did you feel that it was okay that a middle-aged, healthy man was laying outside your lodge only halfway through your activity there, screaming he was having a heart attack and he didn't want to die, and yet nobody called 911? Why did you continue with the sweat lodge and ignore him, or ignore the situation he was in? Why did you continue on when we were told that there were people unconscious and in physical duress inside your sweat lodge, yet you say, nope, we're not going to stop now, we'll wait for the next round and then we'll deal with it, which you didn't deal with it then either. And we can just keep going, but why? You know, what was the purpose? Why did people have to be pushed to this edge for a spiritual awakening?
Yeah.
You know, that why can go all the way back. And by the way, just very quickly, a lady committed suicide just a few months before in an event that my daughter was at. People and the volunteers were never told about it. They were told that they found her and she was fine, and she decided not to come back to the event.
Oh,
yeah.
She was fine, but actually she had committed suicide.
She was dead, and they knew that. They knew that the second day of a three-day event. I joined them, my husband and I joined them for the Black Tie Dinner at the end of it, and I could tell you right now that there was no sign that I could tell from anybody, from James or from his staff, that anything was wrong, never mind something that seriously wrong. They never told us anything about what happened to her until we figured it out after the Sedona event. A group went after it, after the facts, and was able to put it together.
Wow.
So why? You know, why did he say that? Why did he lie?
Well, Connie, what I would like to do, we're at the end of our time for this, but my listeners and I know we're just tantalized. Get her book, go to tragedyinsedona.com, and we want to be able to do follow-up with you down the road.
Absolutely.
Because this trial is going to be going on, and really, it's not so much about, part of it is about James being accountable, so these people didn't die for nothing, and part of it is about how do we make a change in this industry so people actually get their money's worth and don't put their lives at risk.
I plan to be there for opening arguments, because I feel I need to be there to hold space for my friend Liz, who died. And so I will obviously, with the back of the blog, and there's a group of people, some of them are paralegals, who are discussing the case from a legal point of view, and there's people there who've known James for many, you know, more years even than we have, who are discussing things. So there'll be a lot of resources there, and I'd be happy to keep you guys posted as to how things are moving along.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Connie, for taking time out of your busy schedule. And my beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in each and every week. We'll continue with this and keep bringing you more important things for your health and well-being. So until we meet again, God bless and goodbye for now.
Let go of that guy. Cut myself loose and let go of